Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I think any U.S. government employee database is an attractive target for hackers.
The Postal Service is cyber-attacked by Chinese hackers. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Monday, November 10th, 2014. I'm Charlie McGovern. 15 hikers who failed to return on Sunday were found safe this morning. A rescue helicopter spotted the hikers in Eaton Canyon outside Pasadena after an early morning search. The group, ranging in age between 14 and 36, set out Monday morning and were reported missing after dark. Nancy Picado was one of the hikers who spent the night in the canyon.
It was just cold. We were away. We were tired, but we just decided that the best thing we could do is just stay there and rest. And we did as much as we could. We built fire and to keep ourselves warm. We do have some type of experience. We do have some training. So we're good. We're fine. Nothing happened to us. Thank God.
The rescue helicopter also airlifted another hiker who wasn't with the group out of the canyon. 12% of homeless Americans are veterans, according to the National Coalition of Homeless Vets. One developer in East LA is looking to help senior veterans in need. ATVN's Emily Thornburg was on the scene, and she now joins me live in the studio. Emily, what did you see today?
It was pretty amazing. There are a lot of veterans out there, a lot of the new residents. The apartment complex is amazing. It's very updated. There are one bedrooms, one bathrooms, meant for just single veterans living there, all over the age of 55. So they're very emotional about it.
And did anything in particular stand out today?
Yeah, just a lot of the stories. One of the veterans has been homeless for 11 years. So that was crazy that he finally has a place to call home now. And they just talked a lot about like battling veteran homelessness in LA and how the mayor is like planning to have like no homeless veteran on Skid Row by like 2015.
And that's a good goal considering Veterans Day is coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, they said they like planned that on purpose, which, you know.
All right, well, Emily, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Mayor Eric Garcetti announced a major push to cut down on energy use as a way to address climate change and lower electric bills. The mayor said the Department of Water and Power plans to become 15% more energy efficient by the year 2020. According to Garcetti, this is the most ambitious energy efficiency program goal in the nation. A study done by UCLA estimates the energy reduction will create 16 jobs for every $1 million invested into the project. If a company accurately predicted both the 1929 Great Depression and the 2007 recession, would you trust their take on the economy? The Jerome Levy Forecasting Center has done just that, and now it's saying we're headed for another recession. Sarah Tiano has more on the story.
Just when we thought our economy was back on track, a new report says there's a 65% chance of another global recession in 2015. Though the U.S. economy is strong, senior economist Robert King at the Levy Forecasting Center says problems in China, Europe, and emerging markets threaten domestic stability.
If any one of those three regions begins to tip into a recession, then the other two will swiftly follow.
King says China and Europe could stave off economic downturns with policy changes, but that without such efforts, we're looking at a severe recession that will have big impacts on employment and inflation.
Inflation is already very low, and even if a recession were to be short, it would likely be enough to tip that inflation possibly into negative territory.
If the recession hits, though, King believes the U.S. economy could bounce back stronger than before.
Emerging markets have been such a driver of global growth, but we think, again, that's likely to shift back to the United States.
If all this is getting you down, keep in mind, despite having a pretty good track record, the Levy Foundation isn't infallible, having inaccurately predicted a 2010 recession. Sarah Tiano, Annenberg Radio News.
The FBI is in the middle of an investigation into a massive security breach at the United States Postal Service. The agency said today that the mid-September breach of their computer networks was the work of Chinese government hackers. Alana Bracken reports.
The hack compromised the personal information of more than 800,000 people who work for the Postal Service nationwide. The FBI says that this is the third cyber intrusion of government agencies this year that links back to China. John DeLeonardo, a partner at Hunton & Williams LLP and an expert in cybersecurity litigation, believes that this threat is imminent to any government agency.
It's not exactly clear that this type of attack and this type of activity would be limited only to one particular agency of the U.S. government. I think any U.S. government employee database is an attractive target for hackers for a number of reasons, you know, the financial and potentially espionage as well.
The news came as President Obama arrived in Beijing this morning. He met today with President Xi Jinping to talk about relations between the two superpowers. It's likely that cybersecurity will be a main topic of conversation.
You know, this is obviously not the first incident. I'm not sure that this is a watershed incident as it relates to cybersecurity issues between the countries. So I think this is part of a pattern that's emerged. Whether or not this is going to affect relations, it's hard to say.
DeLeonardo believes that the Postal Service and all government agencies need to take some vital steps to protect the information of its employees.
You know, I think each entity has to be cognizant that they may not be aware of what the next threat's going to be. And I think that a certain amount of preparation and constant examination and upgrade of systems is warranted, whether or not you've already been a hacking target or you may be next on a list that you don't even recognize.
In the meantime, the FBI is offering complimentary credit monitoring services to the Postal Service's employees, though they believe the purpose of the hack was not to steal their identities. Alana Bracken, Annenberg Radio News.
Last week, Alaska and Oregon became the latest states to legalize marijuana. Pot advocates here at home are hoping that 2016 will be the year that California voters get their say. Alana Victor has more.
With last Tuesday's election behind us, advocates of legal marijuana are working together to get a ballot measure to legalize pot in front of voters in 2016. So far, pro-pot advocacy groups haven't worked together to push for a vote. The Director for Americans for Policy Reform, John Lee, says this is a major reason this issue was unable to get to this year's ballot.
There's several efforts that are occurring. There are, as I mentioned, several advocacy groups that have been unable to coordinate together for many years in California to get on the ballot with a single initiative, and we're working towards that now.
Dale Geringer is a California board member for NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. He says the main benefits of legal marijuana would be crime reduction, generating tax revenue, and personal freedom. He spoke most passionately about a person's right to use.
And, of course, this is the benefit of personal freedom for those Californians who care about their right to use cannabis, like alcohol or like tobacco.
There is also a strong opposition to legalizing this drug. Scott Chipman is a Southern California chair of Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana.
Big marijuana, like big tobacco of the 50s and 60s, is on the move, and they see the dollar signs that would come as a result of legalization, and they are going to do everything in their power to make marijuana an acceptable, marketable, even if harmful, product.
Chipman says his group is going to launch a very aggressive campaign against legalization. But supporters like John Lee are preparing for 2016 by making changes to the language of the proposition, fundraising, and collaborating with state-run groups. Both sides will be on the move as they work to build momentum over the next year. Alana Victor, Annenberg Radio News.
Net neutrality, the idea that internet providers shouldn't be allowed to speed up or slow down service for individual users, got a major supporter today. Karina Halajian reports.
President Obama is putting his administrative power behind net neutrality. He is urging the Federal Communications Commission to make strict rules in maintaining what he calls an open, fair, and free internet.
They should make it clear that whether you use a computer, phone, or tablet, internet providers have a legal obligation not to block or limit your access to a website. Cable companies can't decide which online stores you can shop at or which streaming services you can use. And they can't let any company pay for priority over its competitors.
Meredith Atwell Baker, the president of the Wireless Association, CTIA, which represents the international wireless telecommunications industry, called Obama's response an overreaction. Baker says that action by the FCC would put too much regulation on a dynamic industry and would threaten mobile providers' ability to invest and innovate. Karina Halajian, Annenberg Radio News.
It might be time to stow away the shorts and sandals for a while, as it's going to stay cool tonight and through the rest of the week. Expect partly cloudy skies with highs in the upper 60s and lows into the 50s for the remainder of the week, including Thursday night's football game against Cal. Later on Annenberg Radio News, growing some ripe, tasty strawberries isn't as nearly as sweet as it seems. French filmmaker Jean-Claude Carrier is the second ever recipient of the honorary Oscar in screenwriting. While he was in LA to attend the award ceremony, USC's School of Cinematic Arts hosted him for a filmmaker's masterclass. Maya Williams was there and brings you the highlights.
Jean-Claude Carrier wrote screenplays for Belle du Jour, The Obscure Object of Desire, and The Unbearable Lightness of Being. And at 83 years of age, he still writes for the silver screen. He considers it a screenwriter's duty to connect with an audience on a basic human level that transcends generations.
We always work here and now. We are not working yesterday, we will not work tomorrow. But we live in the same moment we are alive. We are not, of course, working and writing for the people who have already passed away. That would be unnecessary. We shouldn't think about the people who are not yet born, because we have no idea who they will be. I'm 83 and you are, 18. We are totally different. We are living at the same moment on Earth. You understand what I mean? We are facing the same problems, the same troubles, you know. Tomorrow I won't be here anymore and you will be. But at that moment we are together, whatever our generation, whatever our age. And that's important. So that means I'm working for myself and also for you.
Carrier is perhaps best known for his films made with surrealist icon Louis Buñuel, with whom he spent 20 years in intimate collaboration. Carrier remembers his late friend and creative partner fondly.
He died really when he was 83, my age, by the way. He died happy with this success, you know. The film was like a gem, you know, at the end of his life, you know.
Maya Williams, Annenberg Radio News.
Notorious LA rocker King Tuff is looking to expand his sound with his latest record. Sean Birch caught up with him to see what's new.
King Tuff has carved out a spot in LA's indie music scene with his vintage brand of lo-fi rock. Born Kyle Thomas, the singer has been touring nonstop in support of his latest release, Black Moon Spell. He talked about what separates this album from his previous work.
I guess this one's a little bit more just straightforward rock the whole way through. I would say it's a little heavier, a little bit darker.
The Angelino by Way of Vermont wasn't so keen on LA at first.
You know, I grew up with the stigma against LA. Like, you know, if you're from anywhere but LA, a lot of, you know, you grow up being taught to think it's a terrible place.
But the city has grown on him.
The first few times I came here, I was like not really expecting anything special from it. But then I met some of the best people ever. And then I just kept meeting more and more great people. So that's really what drew me to it in the first place.
The band hit the El Rey Theater last Thursday before heading to Fun 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 Fest in Austin, Texas. Thomas said he enjoys playing both clubs and festivals.
I like doing both. They're kind of like very different. You know, club shows are fun because they get real sweaty and, you know, rowdy. Festivals don't always end up being like that, but it's just a different experience playing for a bigger crowd.
Touring the past several years has left him with some interesting stories.
She told us not to make a lot of noise because one of her roommates was, he'd just been living there a long time and didn't like a lot of noise. And then, so we were like, okay, and, you know, nobody went too crazy. And then a couple weeks later, we found out that he had passed away and he had been in that room the whole time, not alive.
King Tuff will be headed to Europe soon before returning to LA to work on some new material. Sean Birch, Annenberg Radio News.
California produces 9 out of every 10 strawberries that Americans consume each year. Producing that many berries isn't easy, and farmers have been relying on fumigates, a dangerous type of pesticide, to keep the supply steady. But demand for year-round strawberries has opened the door for farmers to use much more of these chemicals than the law allows. Bernice Young is a reporter from the Center for Investigative Reporting. I asked her about the risks of using fumigates.
Well, each fumigant, there are a handful of them and that are used widely in the strawberry industry, and each one has their own kind of potential public health and health impact. The chemical that I was talking about where the exception has kind of become the rule, it's called 1,3-dichloropropene, also frequently marketed as Tolone, and it is treated in California as a carcinogen.
Part of the report is, you know, you mentioned that they are getting exception after exception, and it seems like there's some sort of loophole here. How did this happen?
Essentially, in order to get an exception, all that needed to happen was the pesticide manufacturer, Dow AgroSciences, put in a request to the state regulator and requested more, and it was approved. And that's essentially what's been happening for the last 12 years is, you know, you put in a request, and for the most part, it's approved.
Yeah, it sort of begs the question, if there are regulations and rules in place, but there seem to be loopholes, what's the point of regulating things?
One could argue that that's not ideal public health policy, certainly, and certainly not great regulatory policy when the exception becomes the rule.
In your report, you spoke with the head of the pesticide regulation department, and he said that they'd love for this to go away, but they haven't seen any alternatives. Do you see a solution?
You know, it is difficult. It's certainly very challenging. And strawberries are a very high-risk, high-reward business. They've tried using steam to eliminate pests in the soil. They've tried using coconut core or substrate, which is another way of saying they've substituted what the plant is grown in. Instead of using soil that's kind of prone to bugs and pests, grown kind of artificial substances. But the strawberry growers just feel that at this point in time, it's not viable enough, especially at what they're able to earn.
And it seems like also part of the problem is that there is a high demand for strawberries. Is there something that consumers can do to maybe help alleviate this problem?
A lot of the individuals who are buying strawberries, you know, I'm thinking of the teacher who we featured in our story who works at a school that is surrounded on all four sides by strawberry fields in Oxnard, California. And she's very concerned about pesticide use, as you can imagine. And for her, you know, as a consumer, what she does very consciously is she purchases organic strawberries.
And we've been talking with Bernice Young from the Center for Investigative Reporting about the dangers of pesticides used to produce strawberries and the dilemma of regulating them. Bernice, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wall Street finished green across the board today, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones closing at record highs for the fourth consecutive day. The market was led by transportation and healthcare stocks, while continued drops in oil prices helped consumer brands. Alibaba continued its recent post-earnings run, jumping another 4% on the day. It's been a busy day in sports, and here's McKenna Keel with our Sports Minute update.
Monday is a big news day for both current and former USC players. Star SC running back Javarius Buck Allen has been officially notified that he is a potential candidate for the Heisman Trophy. And current SC quarterback Cody Kessler is one of five finalists for the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award. Other players in the running for the award include Oregon's Marcus Mariota, UCLA's Brett Hundley, and Dak Prescott out of Mississippi State. But not such a great day for former Trojan quarterback Carson Palmer. It was confirmed today that he tore his ACL and will miss the remainder of the season with the NFC West leading Arizona Cardinals. Another former SC QB will be on the big stage tonight for Monday Night Football. Mark Sanchez and the Eagles host the Panthers and Cam Newton tonight for primetime Monday Night Football. Switching gears to the pitch now, the USC women's soccer team will be in the NCAA playoffs for the first time since 2010. The women of Troy will take on number 4 Pepperdine this weekend. McKenna Keel, Annenberg Radio News.
A 33-year-old Long Beach man who earned a living by emceeing children's dance competitions was sentenced to 8 years in prison for possessing child pornography. Paul Barber admitted to hiding a video camera in a changing room used by teenage girls who participated in dance contests at Cypress College. Police found hundreds of photos and videos of young girls on his personal computer, along with mushrooms and LSD, during a search of his home. A judge also ordered Barber to register as a sex offender and to have no contact with minors or work with children. And we all know what that music means. It's time to check in with Brad Stryker to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Brad, what do you got for us?
All right, thank you so much. We've got Starbucks that's stepping up their game once again. It looks like they're adding a full-service menu as well as some wine options. It's going to be kind of interesting. We're going to take a look at that on tonight's newscast. And still on the tone of like a lighter newscast, we're also going to be bringing you a story on Doritos. No, I did not pronounce that incorrectly. It's actually a liquid Dorito product that they're making now. A little bit more of an investigation into that on tonight's show.
So how does one make liquefied Dorito?
You know, I'm not really too sure myself.
And this Starbucks scenario, I can't imagine drinking wine in a Starbucks. Would you ever order wine in a Starbucks?
I certainly wouldn't, but part of that is because I'm not 21. But, you know, we'll just have to see. Tune into tonight's newscast. We'll really find out what's going on.
Ever the law-abiding citizen, Brad Stryker, thank you for coming in today. Be sure to listen to our stories online at annenbergradio.org and check out our show tomorrow afternoon at 4. Reporter Jessica Oliveira will be taking a look at the biggest and oldest bookstore in Los Angeles. Elmo, Cookie Monster, Big Bird, and the rest of the Sesame Street gang are celebrating a big birthday. The show that helped many of us learn our ABCs and 1-2-3s turned 45 today. Here's a quick taste of Kermit and the Cookie Monster.
You see, if anybody can guess from the clues I give what is in this box, then they can keep what is in the box.
Is it cookie?
No, it is not a cookie.
Bye-bye.
Billy Crystal, James Earl Jones, and the late Robin Williams all made appearances on the show that was truly the first of its kind. Creator Joan Ganz Cooney envisioned a show that incorporated theories of how children learn while not driving parents crazy. 45 years later, it's safe to say it was a winning formula. If you were thinking of egging your neighbor's house, think again. Just ask the Biebs. Justin Bieber was ordered to pay $80,000 to cover damages for throwing eggs at his former neighbor's home in January. He has already completed one-third of his required anger management courses. That's it for this Monday. We had help today from Megan Coyle and ATVN. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Sean Birch is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Andy Vasoyan. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Charlie McGovern.